Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 153, the first episode in 2025. How's it going, Hal?
Pretty good, Jason. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Bitcoin's back over 100K. All is right in the world.
Yeah, 16. It turned 16 this week. Yeah, and there's over 100,000, and like not too shabby that it started 16 years ago on like a single laptop or whatever mining Bitcoin, and now it's a presidential campaign promise. Like pretty solid 16 year move.
Yeah, and has just set its new highest difficulty in hash rate, I think, as well on its birthday. So yeah, I mean, things are trending in the right direction for Bitcoin, which is exciting.
The hash rate chart is off the rails. Now, I don't pay that much attention to it because it's not like I do any mining anymore or anything. So it does pop up every month or so, and it's just parabolic.
Yeah. Well, I know we've talked a lot about MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor. I guess what was there's a little bit of news that happened this week, but I think one of the things that kind of stuck out to me that was interesting was that Trump and Saylor are meeting. And I think Saylor went down to Mar-a-Lago, and Trump Jr. posted a picture of him and Saylor saying, two friends, one passion, Bitcoin. So that's kind of exciting with Trump about to take office in, what, 2 weeks-ish? Just under that, I guess. And Michael Saylor coming out and saying that for his gift to humanity, he's going to destroy his keys to his Bitcoin that he owns today. And shoot, MicroStrategy even bought another 1,070 Bitcoin, right, for another $101 million. So I mean, there's just so much positive news coming out from Michael and MicroStrategy, and now that Trump's kind of listening to him and has his ear, or he has Trump's ear, that could be really enticing for this Bitcoin strategic reserve possibility as well.
Yeah, the MicroStrategy, it seems like every week, every Monday, there's an announcement that they bought more. And so looking back on 2024 as a whole, since this is the first episode of 2025, they bought 258,320 Bitcoin last year. Jesus. Which is 385 Bitcoin per day. Since the halving in April, we only mined 450 Bitcoin per day. So MicroStrategy alone almost absorbed the entire mining reward. And with Marathon buying Bitcoin and miners not selling other Bitcoin, I mean, we may just be in a world of static Bitcoin supply, because you've got one entity gobbling up the majority of the mining rewards, plus the miners not selling, you know, they're not selling a single Bitcoin more than they need to. So I'm super curious. 2025, I'm thinking, might be the first year where supply shrinks. And, you know, we've always talked about scarcity and 21 million cap and all these things, but we've never had a real scarcity problem with Bitcoin. But if everybody is going to keep buying, and ETFs bought $35 billion in inflows in 20, and that should only go up for 2025, then I think at some point we actually see what scarcity looks like. Maybe it's not 2025, but at some point it's going to be hard to find Bitcoin to buy. So MicroStrategy is kind of leading the charge on that.
Well, if you look at the charts on Bitcoin on exchanges, it's definitely going down. Right? I think what the total amount is probably under 3 million Bitcoin right now. I mean, I haven't looked at it in a while, but I mean, you're talking about 500,000 or so being bought by MicroStrategy and the exchanges. So if that continues to happen in a couple of years, there's not going to be any left on the exchanges, assuming people don't are holding. And there seems to be a lot of diamond hands in there, Tim.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. It's hard to tell what's available on exchanges. I feel like there's always a new alert that exchange holdings are at their all-time low or whatever, until the price kind of goes parabolic and it's tough to find any Bitcoin for sale. I don't know that we've actually seen what scarcity looks like. We never scraped the bottom of what's available for sale on exchanges. So I don't know what that value is. I mean, you can have a million Bitcoin on exchanges, and as long as nobody wants to sell, then you might as well have zero. So I don't know where that bottom of the barrel is and what it looks like when we scrape it, but it's not filling up. I mean, the Bitcoin that's coming into the world through the mining reward is not finding its way into the general population of Bitcoin. So that's neat.
Yeah. So I know we've talked a lot in last year that we're going to see a lot of regulation, and I'm assuming we're probably going to see a lot more, so some actual regulation this year. But some really positive news around that: the vice chair of supervision at the Federal Reserve, Michael Barr, is resigning prior to Trump beginning. And we're just, I mean, this whole Trump winning, it has promoted so much positive crypto momentum. Coinbase has been sharing some more letters from the FDIC that kind of prove that Checkpoint 2.0 happened, and they had to get a court order to do that. And even what Ripple's CEO was talking about, all their new jobs, 75% of them are going to be US-based now that Trump is going to be taking office. So I'm excited to see what happens with 2025. I think there's a lot of momentum from the regulation side that's moving in the right direction finally. But I think at the end of the day, we need to see something happen at the same time.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me what sentiment can do, right? Like, the regulations haven't changed yet. Trump hasn't been inaugurated, and we haven't put anything in place, and nothing's changed at all. But you can tell that there's a difference, like, in the momentum and just the narrative and the environment around Bitcoin. Like, Trump isn't president yet, but Trudeau resigned. And yeah, who's most likely to replace him is Pierre Poilievre, who's the pro-Bitcoin guy who bought shawarma from the tahini restaurant, which is, the tahini's guys are pretty funny because they used to put up a small restaurant, but every time they buy like a 0.1 Bitcoin, they would put up on their Twitter feed, tahini's announces it's acquired 0.124 Bitcoin at this price, like they're Michael Saylor. But I mean, I've heard him on podcasts and stuff. And so, you know, if he's doing that, I mean, Trump went to PubKey and bought burgers and fries and Diet Cokes. And I mean, you're talking about two G7 leaders that have spent Bitcoin. There's a ton of Bitcoin holders and investors who've never done a Bitcoin transaction, and they both done them on the Lightning Network. So I think that tells me something. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to think that some of the promises that Trump has aren't going to come true on the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve. And then there's things like that, and I'm like, yeah, I get more and more bullish about at least some of that coming true.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. I think Trudeau was kind of a mistake up there. He's been going in the wrong direction, and what his popularity is down to like 20% right now with all the mess that he's created up there. On a positive note, back in the U.S., Morgan Stanley, their E-Trade platform is now exploring offering crypto trading. So, I mean, we're starting to see this adoption of the large investment banks more and more get more into crypto, and that's what we want to happen, right? It has to happen at that level for the mainstream buyers to get into it, unfortunately, to start.
Yeah, I mean, I read that JP Morgan stated Bitcoin is becoming structurally important to portfolios. And if JP Morgan starts to change their tune, they've got to be one of the last major large banks to be holding out. I did not find the article, the quote, or the public issuance of whatever statement JP Morgan had or who it was. You know, sometimes those headlines that I can't find in Reuters or AP or anything, it's like some low level person said something on some podcast and then it gets converted to JP Morgan says. So I don't know if that's like a JP Morgan opinion or if that's somebody at JP Morgan, but either way, it's like I said, the sentiment matters, and it's everything's revolving to be pro Bitcoin. And quite frankly, if you're JP Morgan and you see that, hey, all of the people that are being put onto different positions on the banking side, and the Senate Banking Committee is going to be headed by a pro Bitcoin person, maybe it's time for us to change our tune and start to jump on the team that's winning.
JP Morgan's always been just different, right? I mean, Jamie Dimon is a mess where he's been anti-Bitcoin and been on the Elizabeth Warren side for so long. Yet at the same time, JP Morgan has been one of the biggest buyers of Bitcoin. At least over in Europe, they've been kind of doing it under a different name. So Yes, I think if you look at JP Morgan, they're probably getting on board of Bitcoin. I think they've been on the board, on the side of Bitcoin for a while. They're just not telling anybody because they want to acquire more.
Yeah, I think Jamie Dimon is about the sleaziest of bankers, and like the sleaziest banker in a sea of sleazy bankers. And so he'll do whatever he needs to do or say whatever he needs to say based on what's good for him and what's good for JP Morgan secondarily.
I mean, you still got Larry Fink over at BlackRock saying that you should have at least 2% of your portfolio in Bitcoin. And I mean, we've talked about it. It used to be sub 1%, and now it's already 2%. So by this time next year, it might be 5%. It just keeps going up.
I'm shocked that it is moving that fast in the TradFi Wall Street world that we're at Larry Fink recommending 2% allocation. I mean, the ETFs haven't been out for a year yet, and we're already there. So, you know, like I said earlier, $35 billion flowed into the Bitcoin ETFs last year, and it barely got started. You know, I mean, the last few months we really had exposure to a lot of the major banks and investment houses. So this year is going to be at least double that. So there's a lot of reason to think 2025 is going to be as good as everybody says it is.
Did you read about the thing in Switzerland, the nonprofit group that was trying to get their central bank to buy Bitcoin over there?
I think I read a little bit. I'll let you talk about it.
So they're trying to amend an article in the Constitution. The government of Switzerland did approve the initiative, which is good. Now they need 100,000 signatures in the next 18 months in order for Switzerland to vote on it and determine whether or not they will buy Bitcoin and hold it in their Federal Reserve. So I mean, it's exciting to see. Will it happen? Who knows, right? I think if the Strategic Reserve in the U.S. happens, it might happen a little bit quicker. But it's great to see other countries kind of doing something that I think would be beneficial for their countries as well.
You know, if all it takes is a petition and some signatures in order to get people to actually take a real business-handed look at Bitcoin as an investment vehicle. Even if you don't go down the path of understanding the miners and the nodes and the difficulty adjustment and all of those things, and if you just look at it as adding to your portfolio to increase some volatility and kind of boost your returns, I feel like that's enough. You do that enough times and some of them are like, look, we should have 1%. We should have 2%, you know, Larry Fink's right. And so maybe it's not Switzerland, but Switzerland looking at it means other people have to look at it. And it, like you said, we're 2 weeks away from finding out if we get a day one Bitcoin strategic stockpile from Trump. So times it's a time crunch for these guys on the nation state level. And I have been hearing more and more rumors about some Middle Eastern countries like stacking Bitcoin and holding it and not announcing anything until after the U.S. announces that they're going to do their stockpile. So the UAE speculated to have 300,000 or 400,000 Bitcoin. And, you know, Saudi Arabia is in the same kind of boat that they're not going to announce until after Trump does his thing, because they don't want to they don't want to spike the price before Trump has an opportunity to, and, you know, have Bitcoin be a problem from a international relations standpoint, which is crazy to talk about considering where we were 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have for sure. So I think before we jump into some of the predictions for 2025 on some of these coins, the last thing that I had on my end, Do Kwon back in the U.S., he pleaded not guilty on Thursday last week. I mean, no surprise there, but it's one of those. We got FTX somewhat done with. Now, if we could just get Luna done with, we can all move on and start paying attention to all the good stuff that's happening and not all the crap that's happened in the past.
Oh, yeah. If you can sweep the past negativity under the rug, or really you're not sweeping under the rug, you're resolving the issues and putting it behind you. You know, you really are running out of the scare tactic stuff of like, oh, what happens when the Mt. Gox funds get distributed, and you know, like that stuff just I've been hearing it the whole time I've been into Bitcoin, so it's like it doesn't bother me. But for new people, you know, there are, when you do research, there are reasons to make you spec speculative or skeptical as to why Bitcoin is going to be successful. And all of this negative stuff is kind of hangs over the head of new people jumping in. So, you know, like if you can put that behind you, that's great. I mean, the China ban and non-banning thing, I think, goes on forever. I did read that there's a Chinese company that now holds 334 Bitcoin. And so I was looking into it, like, why is that a big deal? Well, they added 540 Bitcoin in December, and they're an automotive transaction service company. So they mine Bitcoin on the side. So it's like, but they're a Chinese company. So that's why it stood out, because, you know, this Chinese flood of like, oh, Bitcoin's, you know, not available to Chinese companies and but more people, and they're doing it. So, you know, there's just so many different avenues for money to flow into Bitcoin now, and all of them eventually flow into spot Bitcoin. And eventually, you know, especially if the miners pumping Bitcoin into the system, they're holding on to it, or it's getting absorbed on a daily basis, you know, that's a good thing for price. A Hong Kong listed company bought an 80 Bitcoin. You know, these are things that are making news, right? Because at this point, you know, you're 100 Bitcoin is $10 million. And, you know, these companies are stacking. But if you're a company, you're gonna be like, yeah, we have enough money to make a splash here and get a little bit of news or whatever. And so the fold card that you and I have, they did a convertible note for $30 million. Like, yeah, MSTR does them for billions, but Fold is not even public yet, or they're on the verge of becoming public. So they did a $30 million convertible note to stack Bitcoin. So, you know, everybody's following the lead of Saylor on the corporate side. And then I think everybody will follow the lead of the United States on the sovereign side.
Well, and Fold already has over 1,000 Bitcoin in their treasury. So they're going to be light years ahead of a lot of other companies out there for sure, especially for their size. So
I agree.
So let's talk about some predictions for 2025. And do you want to start with Bitcoin, or do you want to start with other predictions and come back to Bitcoin at the end?
I would say I'm mostly only prepared to talk about Bitcoin.
All right. Well, let's start with Bitcoin then. So let's, and maybe before we get into Bitcoin, and I didn't really prepare you with this, but I think from a 2025, there is a chance we're going to see some numbers change kind of dramatically. And those numbers are the number of countries that have Bitcoin on their balance sheet, the number of states, and the number of companies, both public and private. So I took a little bit of a look at that. And before we get into the Bitcoin price, I mean, right now, the number of countries, I think, is at like 8, and you're about 529,000 Bitcoin. So my thought, this is a prediction. So it's almost a random guess at this point, because there's not a ton of detail you can get from a lot of this, but I think we're going to probably close to triple that, right, in this year, which I think is aggressive. But if this strategic Bitcoin reserve does happen, I think everybody else is going to FOMO in very quickly. And so if it does happen, I think it gets that 25. If it doesn't, then it probably doesn't grow nearly as fast. But I think you probably see more than double the amount of Bitcoin held by countries, and that's more than a million. And you could say there's an asterisk. There was a ninth country, Germany. They sold all their Bitcoin. So now that's why we're down to 8.
So dumb. So I think we know of 8. I think there's a lot more. But yeah, I'm more than happy to wing some predictions on things like this, because I have put some thought into it, but not as much analysis. On the country side, I bet that we are aware of 20 countries by the end of the year that have Bitcoin on the balance sheet. And maybe that's not in a huge way, you know, honestly, El Salvador has probably made the biggest news, but from an actual Bitcoin holdings, it's not like they have, you know, Germany sold five times or more than five times the Bitcoin that El Salvador holds, and they've been stacking diligently for 4 years.
Well, El Salvador is at 6,000 now, and Germany sold 50,000. So yeah. I think one of the more intriguing ones is Bhutan. That's like 13,000, right? I mean, those are some crazy ones. And yeah, we've been talking about the UAE for a couple of weeks now, and it's just not official or public yet.
Same with Qatar.
Yeah, I mean, any of those oil-producing companies or countries are probably going to divest into Bitcoin, because why wouldn't you if you're kind of printing money with oil these days?
I agree. And I mean, the European countries, it seems like they're just dominoes. So whichever one of those falls first, then you're going to get a bunch. I mean, I'd say 20, but if we'll talk about this in the predictions market, but if everything goes the way, like the bullish direction, it could be more, way more than that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because it's so easy to buy Bitcoin 24/7, you know, a bunch of different ways. All you got to do is figure out how you're going to custody it. Most of these pension funds are using the ETF. So, I mean, if you're a, I don't know what the rules are for all the different countries of buying equities, but if you can buy equities, you can buy ETF. So, and if you can't, then you just need to figure out how to custody Bitcoin. But I mean, honestly, if banks can custody Bitcoin in 2025, which is one of the things on my list of positive momentum drivers, then it gets really, really easy for countries to stack Bitcoin.
Well, yeah. I mean, my hope is the repeal of SAB 121 happens very quickly after Trump gets in office. Yep. So let's go to states, U.S. states, right? Right now, we're at pretty much zero that have Bitcoin on their books. There's a lot that are talking about it, or a handful that are talking about it. Yep. Where do you think that goes by the end of this year?
So I bet there's 10 that have Bitcoin by the end of the year. I think Pennsylvania and Texas will have it. And then, you know, Wyoming seems like a slam dunk. I would imagine the California, Florida, you know, states like that are jump in as well. And then, you know, once there's four or five or six, it's just a copycat syndrome and who's going to move and who's not. And so I think it could be more than 10. It's more likely to be more than 10 than less than 10, but I like the number 10.
That was more aggressive than I was thinking. I was thinking six, just because it's going to take a little bit longer for some of these states to jump into it. I mean, Ohio is one of those that I would throw in the list of ones that happen quickly. You mentioned all the other big ones that I would have named as well. I mean, I'm also not, I believe that it could definitely be more than six or 10 as well, right? So if something happens, especially early January, and the USs are going to do this, why would every state not jump in and say, oh, we need to do this too? So, and maybe not even every state, if you have 20 states do it, then that's not a big surprise.
Well, and if you look, like, we didn't mention Georgia, but from a mining standpoint, Georgia's pretty, it has some pretty substantial mining capabilities. So, you know, and we're a fairly reasonable state when it comes to how we manage funds. So it wouldn't be surprising if you have states like that jump in. Same with any of the energy heavy states. Alaska makes sense. So, you know, give me that. And I'm not interested in like making predictions that don't stick my neck out a little bit. I honestly felt like 10 states is, if things don't go well, like if we don't get the SBR, you know, or things are delayed and all that, then I think we get to 10. I think if things do go well and it's like day one, 200,000 are getting moved, 200,000 Bitcoin are getting moved to a strategic stockpile, I think we're way over 10.
Yeah. All right. So what about companies? Right now, what you can find is there's about 46 public companies that hold just under 600,000 Bitcoin and about 12 private companies that hold just over 350,000 Bitcoin. Where does that go by the end of this year?
It's going to be through the roof. Just, you know, the thing about it with the companies is like the smaller you are, the more likely you are to jump in. But you've got companies like Block, Tesla, Strategy, obviously, but like Semler Scientific and Genius Group. And I mean, you can just, if your Twitter feed's like mine, you can just see them popping up over and over again. And Michael Saylor is basically dedicating his time to helping these companies get on board. So it's not like you're waiting for these companies to figure it out themselves. Like literally there was a Twitter exchange between Michael Saylor and one of the companies that just started buying. And he was thanking Michael Saylor for all the help. And Michael Saylor was like, yeah, no problem. And like at some point I heard Michael Saylor talking about he's picking up the mantle for Satoshi, who was creating Bitcoin for individuals. And he's going to help drive it for businesses and states and countries. So like the dude has been successful. It's hard for me to vote against him. 46 public companies have Bitcoin on the balance sheet today. Give me 100. It could be way more than that. That feels like my Penn State prediction. It should be a lot more than that.
My rule of thumb was going to be, I think we triple the number of companies and double the amount of Bitcoin that's being held by them. So they won't do huge buys, but so we go from 46 to like 150 public companies and maybe 12 private to 36 private, but it doesn't triple the amount of Bitcoin. And I mean, double is going to be a lot more difficult, assuming that the price goes up the way that we think it's going to go to. So, but yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Also, it's going to be tough for the average holdings of the companies to even come close to where we are now, because MicroStrategy off the rails. Like, nobody else is going to do what MicroStrategy is doing. Marathon is putting that convertible note strategy into action, but nobody's going to do it in the same way that Sailor is. But you'd have to have a company. You'd have to realize that your company is a zombie. And I don't think there's enough Bitcoiners in CEO positions and board positions to understand that they've been growing at 7% per year, and that's terrible, right? Like, congratulations, every dollar that is printed by the U.S. government proportionally finds its way into your company. Like, that sucks. You're break even at 7%. So, you know, I don't think people understand that, and I don't expect them to. I think that the larger the company, the less likely they are to be able to do it. But these smaller companies can chew them up. And so I'm basically saying one a week. We add one company a week, and you're saying we add two. I feel like I should raise mine, but I'm going to stick with it.
Well, this is kind of off the cuff, so it's fine where it is.
Yeah, I mean, I need to look. Like, now in my head, I'm like, okay, well, you've got like the Qs, which follow the NASDAQ. But there's the, what is it, the 1000 and the 2000, the Russell 1000 and the Russell 2000. It's like 1000, like that's only 10% of the Russell 1000 or 5% of the Russell 2000. Like 5% is a kind of a low number. So let me change my off the cuff from to 200. Let me go Price is Right style. I'll go over you, but you, I'll leave the gap.
All right.
I could have said 151.
So I think if somebody like an Amazon pulls the trigger and puts some of their reserves into Bitcoin, like they've been talking about, then the number goes over 200. Right. But if that doesn't happen, then it's just a bunch of small guys for now.
Yeah, I would expect it's mostly small guys. Like, it's just so hard for these big. I mean, Microsoft didn't even sniff looking at the stuff. So, and you know, there's people at Microsoft, even at higher levels, because it's a tech company that are into it. So I'm very bearish on big companies jumping in. I'm very bullish on smaller companies. Like, it's a good way to turbocharge. But if you have a monopoly, you're not worried about your competition. And so if you're in the Mag 7, what do you care? You know, if you have $500 billion melting away. But if you have 25 competitors in a heated market, and you need to find whatever edge you can get, dumping 10% of your reserves into Bitcoin makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go to Bitcoin. Let's talk about Bitcoin, where we think that's going to go. I mean, it's just over $100,000 right now. What's your, and maybe the thought is kind of a bear case, a bull case, and then maybe a moonshot type of case that's a 5%-ish probability.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm prepared to talk about. So I went through and did like a pretty actually sit down and do an analysis kind of thing. Every bearish case I came up with was mitigated with bullish cases. Like in 2020, we had COVID, everything dropped, and then everything bounced back, and they printed money because there was a problem. So I went back and I was like, all right, who are the big winners from that? Like Zoom, Amazon, Netflix, Peloton, you know, what? So I'm like, man, what are those companies even doing, right? Zoom went up to $559 in late 2020. Now they're at 83. So Amazon was at 160 in January 21. Now they're at 224. Netflix, they're 691 at the end of 21, and now they're 881. So they're up a couple, you know, 20%. Peloton, they were at $150 a share in early 2021. Now they're at 9. So Bitcoin, was at 69,000 in October of 21, and now it's at 100 grand. Without any CEO, without any business decisions, no competition, no over marketing, no overstretching, no adding too much inventory, no supply chain issues. And any supply chain issue that happens with Bitcoin is a great thing for the price, because if it is hard to find, then the price just goes up. So, you know, every time I thought about, okay, well, if we don't get the strategic Bitcoin reserve, what does that mean? And I'm like, man, I don't think that's priced in, right? The price may go down a little bit on the announcement, but I don't feel like that's a problem. The ETFs aren't going to go away. Like, nothing's going to go away. Bitcoin is like a ratchet strap. And it's, you know, the last few years, it's just been click, 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 click. And whatever real estate it's gained, it's not going to give it up. So the only bearish things in the future are, you know, things not happening that we think will happen. And honestly, like, okay, if they don't lower rates, I mean, we've got a strong dollar right now. We've got high mid rates right now, and we're at over 100,000. So, you know, okay, so are they going to raise rates and screw the interest expense? Like, I don't see that happening. So my backstop to all of my bearish predictions is, if we do have a credit crisis, they're going to print money. That's good for Bitcoin. If we do have World War III, they're going to print money. Good for Bitcoin. If we don't have any problems, they're going to print a little bit of money. That's good for Bitcoin. And if we have like an alien attack, then they're going to print a whole bunch of money. So I'm like, I can't figure out a bearish case where, like, oh yeah, I can see us being at $50,000 per Bitcoin. Like, the 200 week moving average is like $48,000 now. So we, you know, that usually acts as the floor in the bear markets. So for 2025, we should not be touching the bear market floor. We should be, you know, a blow off top style. So my bearish case is pretty limited. And every time I thought about something bad happening, I was like, well, if it happens, they're going to print money. So, you know, I don't have very much downside. I think Bitcoin's not going to go lower than $50,000 in 2025. Like, that's a 95% confidence kind of prediction. Is it going to go to 80? It'll probably touch 80, because we had 6 days where we closed in the 80s. Like, that's a pretty big gap. Usually Bitcoin fills that gap. So I could see us, you know, getting a pop with an announcement of the 200,000 Bitcoin being moved to a stockpile, and then something going on and we could go down. Don't know that we're going to see anything under six digit Bitcoin. And again, like, we're 2 weeks away. I think that, so I looked into this. So going into the bullish case, right? I think that the strategic Bitcoin reserve is the biggest binary bull case that I can think of. On day one, he's either going to say, we're going to take the 200,000 Bitcoin and we're going to move it to a reserve. We could be that 100,000 of it that belongs to like Bitfinex, those don't get, and 100,000 get put into the reserve and 100,000 get held out and maybe distributed back to them. Whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, if it's 100,000 Bitcoin or 200,000 Bitcoin, it doesn't matter. And I think, I honestly have a high percentage chance of that happening. And the value of that's through the roof, because every country's paying attention. If they do pass a Bitcoin strategic reserve where they're actually purchasing Bitcoin, then even better for price, you know, awareness, adoption, all the people that aren't getting into Bitcoin because they think the US government's going to stamp it out because they think they can do that because they don't understand Bitcoin. All of that concern disappears. So now more people are getting into Bitcoin through the ETFs who are not into Bitcoin at all. I think they lower rates, or at least keep them the same. I think that Trump is going to weaken the dollar. I mean, honestly, the dollar needs to get weaker no matter what, but that weaker dollar, better for Bitcoin. You got a lot of stuff on the corporate side, and the corporate adoption's going up. We talked about that. Once those accounting rules get well understood, we're a few months away from the first reporting for MicroStrategy under the new accounting rules, where they get to actually mark to market the price of the Bitcoin they have. I think that's going to shock the system for a lot of corporations. And then I think within 3 to 6 months after that, you see a kind of an inflow of corporations adding Bitcoin to the balance sheet. I think that we do see banks being able to custody Bitcoin by the end of the year. I don't know how much it moves the needle because of the time, but if you log into your Wells Fargo account and you've got your checking account, your savings account, and then your savings account in Bitcoin, it just gets really normalized to seeing Bitcoin along with your money. And the ETF, I bet $100 billion flows into the ETFs into Bitcoin this year. So, you know, I put some percentage chances of all these things happening so that it wasn't stacking them up. But if everything hits, I got Bitcoin at 775,000. If my percentages
for your high or your middle case?
No. That would be if everything hits. That's like if all of my 50-50 shots and 25% shots, if they all hit. Then so 775 is at the top end of my 95% confidence interval.
Okay.
The middle of my 95% confidence interval is 340. And then the bottom of my 200, or the bottom of a 95% confidence would be 200,000. But I think we're going to be between 240 and 340. I think that I'm very comfortable with that. 100 being on the low end, 775 on the high end. But I bet we kind of peak out around 240 to 340. But it really only takes one of these big heavy hitters to knock this thing into 500,000.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, shoot, Fidelity's even projecting 200K this year, right? So when they're saying that, it's probably going to go higher. What you didn't talk about was China about to unload some dollars into the market with their infusion into the economy that they're talking about doing. And if that happens, that's really another huge bazooka that goes off for Bitcoin. And then Jim Cramer, of course, is calling Bitcoin to go down to 90K, which to me means it's never going there ever again. So, we're not going to see any downturn like that, right? So what's kind of funny is my numbers were very similar to your numbers to start. I tried to think of what could happen. What's the worst case that could happen? And I mean, I don't know why it only does this, but my bear case was the worst case is like 164,000. Right? And a lot of that was some of the fibs. And if they just hit that, and then it would not be very impressive. I think without a doubt, we're probably going to be somewhere over the 256K amount, but I was right kind of in a line. As long as the strategic reserve happens, then 700K was kind of my top end, which is kind of very similar to yours too, right? So yeah, we're kind of aligned with a lot of this, plus or minus 20% or so, but.
Yeah, I did have one where it's like, man, if you do have scarcity, then you could have it. If you have scarcity and sovereign wealth adding to it, that are price agnostic, then you could see $1 million Bitcoin in 2025. But that means every single thing has to go exactly right. And so it's like, it's such a small percentage chance, but it's a way higher percentage chance than Bitcoin going to 30 grand.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I think if it does go to a million, and actually we're saying 700K, which is not far off, is a decent possibility. Hitting 1 million, there's going to be a lot of other problems that happen too, that we're going to, I think the world in general is going to be struggling with if that happens. But
no, there's just be a ton of money being printed.
Yeah. So, all right. So did you do any of this stuff for Ethereum or any other coins at all?
Not in that much depth. I've kind of just had some numbers in mind based on what I thought. So I'll let you lead on Ethereum and Solana.
Yeah. So, I mean, Ethereum, I've always been kind of a big fan. What I'm finding a lot more of is that Solana is definitely doing a better job from the marketing side of things. And I mean, they're a smaller market cap and everything too, right? So the upside on them is probably a little bit better. The one thing that Ethereum has going for them that I see is stablecoins, right? And if you look at stablecoins, most of it is done on Ethereum. 80% of all the crypto trading volume today utilizes stablecoins in one form or another. So that will continue to be a big piece. It's already taking over a lot of the remittances around the world. So it's becoming more popular, and the usage for stablecoins is up 50% year over year. If you talk about real world assets, which I'm kind of a big fan of, I believe that's going to start to happen more and more. And I think that's what Larry Fink at BlackRock's been talking a lot about. Most of that is being chosen to be put onto the Ethereum network. The only problem with Ethereum is there's a ton built on Ethereum, but a lot of the focus lately has been offloading everything onto L2s. So I think really important stuff will be on the Ethereum network. The L2s are getting a lot more, which takes away from some of the fees from Ethereum. But I think that's one of those where maybe this year we'll find out if the market believes that's a good idea, because it has reduced some of the fees to Ethereum, but that means that long-term growth will be better. There's another upgrade coming at some point that I think has been scaled down a little bit this year for Ethereum. Instead of putting it all back on the mainnet, they're going to make it easier for some of the L2s. So time will tell. I mean, I was kind of thinking Ethereum was going to outperform Bitcoin. Honestly, it's a coin flip at this point. So from a safety perspective, just staying in Bitcoin is probably the best for me. Some of it's in Ethereum already. I just don't want to pay the taxes and I'm going to roll the dice. So I think on kind of a low end, you're looking at right around $5,000 for Ethereum. And it's at, what, 3.7 right now? So nothing huge. If it does really well, I think it close to triples, 10 or 11K. And if everything goes well, we're talking about maybe like 15K Ethereum, right? But I mean, I'm not super positive on any of those numbers either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I feel like it gets hard, really hard to predict Ethereum. The one thing you didn't mention that I have is like the one of the main drivers is the ETFs. They've got a huge head start there. Their money's started flowing in. And as money flows in a big way to Bitcoin, I think that the TradFi guys are just so used to diversifying. I think they just throw some money into Ethereum. And so I think that they catch, you know, $20 billion through the ETFs maybe. And they did talk a little bit about maybe staking being allowed in the ETFs. The, what's her name? Who's the SEC?
Hester Pierce.
Hester Pierce mentioned both in-kind buy or in-kind purchases in the ETFs and staking being something that they could see adding. And so if you did that, then not only does the Ethereum just have the advantage of skiing in the wake of the BTC, you know, cruise ship, but they also have a dividend that the Ethereum, that the Bitcoin ETFs don't have. So to me, maybe it looks a lot like an attractive thing for traditional, you know, financial advisors to get into. It gives their people some exposure into the crypto world, but it also provides some cash flow. So you decrease your cost basis over time. So I thought, you know, Ethereum would be able to catch a little bit of gains there. And other than that, I mean, they've got like just an early, you know, they've been in the market longer. And if it wasn't for Vitalik looking and acting the way he does, I think Ethereum would be way better off. But I didn't put a lot of thought into this, but you know, I view Ethereum kind of, it seems to always hit its head on the ceiling in the 4,000s, you know, something like that. I think this year we go past that, and I had $7,500 per Ethereum as the prediction for 2025.
Okay. So Solana, let's jump into that one real quick. Solana is at about 220 right now. I talked about kind of the marketing just seems really good for them right now. I think we talked a while ago about their Seeker phone, which is the next generation phone from the Saga. It is scheduled to ship in Q1. They had 145,000 pre-orders at $500 a piece, right? And a lot of it is similar to the Saga, where they talk about they're going to do some airdrops to make it advantageous. So you're going to see a lot of interest, I think, in the Solana network again because of that. They're also working on an activity tracker that's supposed to happen in 2025. And just, I mean, health in general is, and activity trackers are going crazy. So if that happens and you can get more of this, I think they already had what step in was that step counter, and you could theoretically get paid to walk and an NFT. The Fire Dancer, which is their next upgrade, is supposed to be coming in Q1 as well. And that's supposed to change the game for Solana. They have released that they are quantum resistant now, which I think is funny because it is, if you want to keep your coins away from quantum computing, then you can put it in a separate wallet that is quantum resistant. The entire network isn't quantum resistant, but this separate wallet.
Your
is.
Coins so, could become worthless, but they would not be up for grabs.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good. I mean, I still think quantum computing is a decade or two away. And we don't really have to worry about it from a blockchain perspective yet. And they're working on solutions to it. But it's still kind of funny that Solana came out with that. And then I think the other big thing that I'm intrigued about is some of the deep end type activities that are being done on Solana. So Dawn, which is pretty much the decentralized ISP, is supposed to be coming in 2025. So if stuff like that continues to happen, then I think you're going to see something that could outperform Bitcoin. At least that's kind of the thought, and partly because it's just such a small market cap compared to what Bitcoin is. I think it will definitely outperform Ethereum. My targets that I had were about 450K, kind of a worst case, which is a little bit one double, kind of that good bull case is probably about 745. And then if everything goes right, it's going to surpass 1,000, probably get up to about 1,200.
Yeah. So the only thing I have for Solana that you didn't talk much about was just the meme coin stuff that doesn't seem to go away. And it seems to generate some activity on Solana. I didn't put as much thought into it as you did, but I had $750 per Solana as kind of my target high area for Solana. You know, picking a single number is kind of a loser's game. I like to bracket things and put percentages around them, but without, I don't know enough about these, you know, the outside of Bitcoin to even think that I know all the different things that may or may not happen in the next 6 to 12 months. And what percentage chance those things happen and what kind of impact they would have. So, you know, I'm kind of hamstrung on that. But, you know, like you said, there's a marketing, like the Solana brand is better than the ETH brand. Like, I don't know of any one person involved in Solana. So I don't have like this thing in my head of like, man, this guy's a loser. Like, I don't trust this guy with anything. So, and not only that, like Solana kind of had the advantage of the last, they were the darling of the last bull cycle. And I think that that'll pay dividends for them because, you know, there's going to be some new guys on the block that do really well this cycle, but they've already got the branding. They already, you know, people have already bought some. And as soon as you get off zero, it's easier to put more in. So I think Solana does pretty well. And so that's $750 per coin is where I'm at.
Yep. So the thing I did was try to think about what other themes in the crypto space would possibly outperform Bitcoin. And I know this is probably not something you did much of, right? Because you're not paying attention to this. But I looked at one was, is there a token in the top 100 that can outperform Bitcoin and really almost in the top 20, 25? To me, HBAR, Hedera, is probably the one that is the most intriguing with everything they're doing. A lot of interesting stuff. When we talk about quantum computing, they're already quantum proof resistant, whatever you want to call it. They're not a true blockchain, so they're more of a hashgraph, but it's got some really interesting things on there. Their transactions are almost close to finality in less than a second for a lot of stuff, right? So things can move entirely very quickly. There was talk, what, a year or two ago that Twitter or X was going to use Hedera for some of their payment rails. But there's a lot of things that are getting built on Hedera now that are going to be exciting, and I think it has the potential to grow quite a bit. It still has kind of the issue with the full market cap isn't there yet because there's still some coins that are locked, so that's always kind of an asterisk for me. But they're kind of the big company out there that I think that can compete with some of the returns that you're going to see out of Bitcoin. DPIN, decentralized physical infrastructure, Render is probably the one that, if you're going to make me pick one, is the one that I think will outperform kind of the rest of the market. Privacy, I know that's becoming a bigger and bigger thing, right? So for me, there's an interesting DEX that is all about privacy and sharing some of the rewards with their users. So OXO was kind of intriguing. I think AI agents and decentralized science are also going to be two themes that grow a bit. I just know nothing about either one of those. They're just super interesting, especially with what just happened with COVID and all the money that got thrown around with that. If you can utilize DeSci to create some things that are better for humanity, then those might grow very quickly over the next couple of years, especially with bird flu apparently coming to the US and all that kind of stuff too. And just, I mean, AI is going to be a theme we're going to hear about for the next multiple years, if not multiple decades. And the AI agents seem intriguing, something like humans.ai, but I honestly know almost nothing about it other than the little bit that I read in articles here and there.
So HBAR is on my radar because they did an ETF filing. Everything else I'm aware of, but I don't know much about it. As far as stuff competing with Bitcoin, it kind of boils down to like, you might be able to beat the returns that you could get with Bitcoin, but you're not going to be able to do it with so much confidence that you put everything you got or all your investable assets into that one thing that is the winner. You know, you'd have to spread it out and diversify, and then you have some losers that don't do much, and you got some winners that go up. And so to me, I mean, honestly, that's the whole thing. Is I've done a lot of research into buying stocks and options and derivatives, and every time I do research, I learn more and more stuff and deeper stuff, and there's more and more dudes that just spend 20 hours a day on this stuff, and I'm never going to beat them. And I feel like the same way with the crypto side, that like, man, for me to beat these guys or win, to beat some sort of an index of the top five, you know, tokens or whatever, like, I just, the amount of time that it's going to take, I don't want to invest it. And so that's kind of what always leads me back to Bitcoin, is I just buy Bitcoin, listen to some podcasts to keep myself fresh, and kind of do whatever I want to do during the day. And so, you know, for that reason, that's why I am where I am on my Bitcoin versus crypto stuff. I'm more than happy to listen and hear about it. And I do think that there will be advantages and there will be real world use cases for these cryptocurrencies. But picking the ones that take off at different times seems like beyond impossible. You know, it almost like which meme coin is going to be next. You know, it's like, how are you going to pick? So like, I get it. I dig it. I think that in 2025, I spend even less time on everything beyond Bitcoin. It's just, it's like a bull run. It goes nuts, man. Like, we might have 15,000 tokens per day entering the market. Like, I think I just check out completely and just go with Bitcoin.
Well, I think the way that I look at it, and it's taken me way too long to look at it this way, is there are going to be a lot of altcoins that do very well. The problem that most people have is they don't get out of them. They think it's going to do another XRP where it does 20,000%. So the way to look at a lot of these is, once it goes up, take some of your gains, put that back in Bitcoin, because there is going to be another winner that does come, crypto winner, that Bitcoin could pull back some. The difference is Bitcoin's going to pull back a little bit. These altcoins, you lose 80-90%, and that's normal. So, I mean, yeah. Like HBAR, I mean, its top was, I don't know, 32, 35 cents before. They got down to 3 cents, and now they're back up to 35. So a year ago, if you would have bought them at 3 cents, you would have been up more than 10x. Shoot, I think they did an 8x in like November of last year, right? So they did some amazing stuff, and I think there's some cool stuff coming. But, I mean, you didn't want to ride it from 35 down to 3 and back up to 35. Like, that's not the goal. Bitcoin doesn't have that huge drawdown. They have had huge drawdowns for sure. I don't think they're going to have the level of drawdowns that you're going to see in all these altcoins, just because they're so far behind the lead that Bitcoin has today.
Yeah, and also some of these altcoins, they go from a dollar down to a nickel, and then they never get above a dime. Like, it's just over for them, and the team moves on and things like that. So yeah, I'm more than happy to increase my conviction in Bitcoin and Bitcoin alone. Like, I still hold like 7-year-old crypto and different tokens and things that I'm like, man, if one of these things does pop, then I'll convert it to Bitcoin. But you know, it's nothing's done it yet. I will say, in the last bull run, BNB, Binance coin, went crazy, and at like 2:30 in the morning, I went out of the car, got the laptop, and sold it all and bought Bitcoin with it. And it was like, it was a crazy number, like over a Bitcoin. And I'm like, this is awesome. And I don't know where it is now, and I have no regrets. But it's, you know, if those things do happen, then I think you got to be ready to jump.
I mean, it's done pretty well, but I think that it went from like $3 to $600 during that. Yeah. Like, it was insane, right? So, and it hasn't really gone much higher than $600 since then. So I think you're doing, you made the right choice, right? I mean,
yeah, I think I sold it right around in that $600 range. Like, yeah. it was like, I told my wife, I'm like, hey, this is going to sound crazy. I'm going to rent out the car real quick. And she's like, whatever. It's 2:30 in the morning. But again, like you said, man, a lot of people don't sell. A lot of people don't get out of the bed. And by the time you wake up and get your day started and get busy, and then 11 a.m. rolls around, it's at $400, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you're like, ah, I'll go back to 600. Next thing you know, it's at 200. So you got to be ready to, jump out of that stuff.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, cool. Well, we'll see how wrong we are with all these predictions here in a year.
Can't wait.
So, but I mean, overall, I think the excitement that I have, and I think you have too, for 2025 to see some actual positive regulation happen, at least in the US, is going to be amazing, right? And time will tell whether or not Trump actually follows through with all the things he said he was going to do. But even if he just follows through with half of it, we're going to be in an amazing place compared to where we were in the past 4 years.
Hey, I got a non-monetary prediction that I just thought about. How much Bitcoin does the U.S. hold at the end of 2025?
Ooh.
I haven't put a ton of thought in this. I'm putting you on the spot, but I think it's worth making that prediction because everything else is just dollar values of tokens. So anyway, while you're doing that, I'll go ahead and start talking while you think. Okay. I think slam dunk. It's not 100%, but I bet there's 100,000 Bitcoin on the balance sheet by the end of January. I think they find ways to add to that, especially in as other countries add to theirs, then Congress starts to fall in line. And so I bet that we are at 275,000 Bitcoin for U.S. reserves on December 31st. 275,000 Bitcoin.
Okay. So the goal is to get to 1 million in 5 years. I'm going to go outlandish here and say that MicroStrategy gets Trump's ear and teaches him to flip all the gold into Bitcoin and go a little crazy. So, I mean, I think there's a chance that we do a lot of it early and we double. And I say double the 200 and something that's already theoretically on the books that we own. We're north of 400K.
Bold.
Yeah.
If that's the case, then my 340 number, I think, is bearish.
Gosh, if either one of them happens, that's fantastic, right? I'm definitely going out on a limb and saying
we're going to do
something crazy is going to have to happen.
We'll do our podcast from a remote location in at the end of 2025 if we get there, man. That'll be that yeah. I dig it. I'm all about it. Yeah, we talk about like, okay, where's the money going to come from? A lot of the money comes from just free cash that flows into this thing. But like, you know, I'm a guy, I'm selling two duplexes closing in a week and a half, and that money's going to flow into Bitcoin, whether it's MicroStrategy so I can get some cash flow or it's just Bitcoin and it just disappears. It goes into cold storage and then maybe I end up, you know, using it later. But, you know, there's a lot of people like me, and then you got a lot of people that are, instead of investing in what they normally invest in, they're going to like how I got in 2017, I was buying rental properties and I'm like, well, I'm just going to skip one and I'm going to buy Bitcoin with it. So to me, you know, that stuff is going to happen to other people. And I think there's plenty of money out there to get us into the, you know, close to mid six figures before you have to start getting crazy to find the cash. You know, I don't think you have to have a global collapse and somehow everybody discovers that Bitcoin is the way to go in order to get to, you know, 300-400 grand.
Damn. Well, I was excited over around Christmas. I think my in-laws gave my kids $20, which is a lot of money for them, right? And they're like, yeah, what are you going to go buy with this? And they're like, we're probably going to go buy Bitcoin. And I was like, yes, I feel like I'm winning right now.
Yes. That's awesome. I love it when, like, so my son yesterday, my son's going to come into a couple $100. He flipped something on Facebook sale. And so after he's going to net maybe $200, and he's checking the Bitcoin price already. And he's like, dang it, it's going up. He's like, he understands that he's, going to buy less Bitcoin because the price is going up, and it's important enough for him to actually check it. So yeah, there's, you know, just having kids who think that, okay, dollars aren't where you want to be, you know, in any long-term capacity. And because when he checked the price, I was like, hey man, you know, we're not really looking at selling Bitcoin anytime soon. You really don't need to check the price. He's like, no, Dad. I wanted to buy it when it was 95,000, but I didn't have the money. I'm like, oh, that's totally fine. Check the price.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, my kids have a long ways before they get a chance to touch their Bitcoin, but at least they're trending in the right direction right now. So,
oh, yeah. No, that's great.
Awesome. Well, as always, Hal, this has been a blast. Excited to see what happens in 2025. I don't want to go nearly as fast as what I feel like 2024 did, but I also want to know how right we were at the end of the year, how wrong we are going to be at the same time.
Yeah, man, I feel like the weeks go by pretty slow and the year seems like it goes by really fast.
Yeah. I'm sure kids don't help with that either.
That's right, man. Well, I appreciate it. And yeah, looking forward to seeing you next week.
All right. See ya. Yeah.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.